Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Luther College, offering more than 60 areas of study, including the new data science and neuroscience majors, dedicated to preparing students for success in a changing world.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're going to talk about a mental illness that's hard to diagnose and hard to treat, borderline personality disorder. Here's how the National Institute of Mental Health describes it. Borderline personality disorder is a mental illness marked by an ongoing pattern of varying moods, self-image, and behavior. These symptoms often result in impulsive actions and problems in relationships. People with borderline personality disorder may experience intense episodes of anger, depression, and anxiety that can last from a few hours to a few days. As the hour goes on, we'll learn about this disorder and treatments for it. We're going to start with someone who has firsthand experience. Ross Trowbridge lives in Cedar Falls, and he lives with borderline personality disorder. He's the founder of the I Am Not Ashamed Project, an effort to educate people about this disease and to help combat stigma, and he is with me now. Hello, Ross.
Hello. How are you doing today?
I'm great. Thank you so much for being here.
Well, thanks for having me. I'm excited to be on the show.
Now, you were diagnosed with borderline personality disorder in July of 2015, but you've lived with this disorder for many years. Can you tell me a little bit about when what is now known to be borderline personality disorder started appearing in your life?
You know, looking back, In terms of borderline personality disorder, I did not know I had it until 2015, but I really had symptoms all the way back through, I would say, adolescence.
Well, what kind of symptoms did you have?
A lot of, I was very sensitive, and I really felt out of place as even a child, and I would take things personally a lot of times. It was hard for me to really have the ability to maintain a healthy interpersonal relationship. And, you know, some people, with borderline, there is the symptoms of, you know, some people may be a little bit more aggressive. And I was on the opposite spectrum of that. And I was kind of, an introvert. I really felt like I had a very intense emotions even from adolescence. And that's kind of what I feel, you know, the borderline personality disorder is really an emotional intensity disorder, in my opinion. And I know the medical community out there is looking at potentially changing that name. So I had intense emotions, and it was really hard for me to deal with those emotions even in the adolescent years, and more so though in the teenage years.
You mentioned getting a number of different diagnoses over the years. What were those diagnoses?
I've been diagnosed with major depressive disorder, general anxiety disorder, substance abuse disorder, OCD, ADHD. I've impulsive control disorder. And you know, the thing is, with all of those disorders that I was diagnosed with over the years, looking back at it, if you look at the 9 criteria under the DSM, those are the symptoms of borderline. So I was really being treated over the years for, I was treated for the wrong disorder. I wasn't receiving the right treatment. Medications didn't necessarily work all that much. They may, you know, help with depression and anxiety at times, but they didn't fix me.
What did it cost you in those years when you weren't diagnosed, before your diagnosis? How did that affect your life?
It almost cost me my life. It did. I, you know, from age 18 on, I, you know, when I was supposed to be a responsible adult, leaving the house, going out to college, and I was supposed to be responsible. I was supposed to be able to be an adult. I was supposed to be able to handle my emotions and act in healthy ways and build interpersonal relationships. And what this caused is it caused a lot of, you know, first of all, I ended up dropping out of college just a semester short. I ended up losing, I ended up, with a divorce. I ended up being on, really hanging on to life for a great deal of time. I had multiple hospitalizations. I had a suicide attempt. I had, many, many months of ongoing suicidal ideation. And, I did have some time of stability and being, functional. But when, when things got bad, they really got bad. And it was so frustrating because I didn't know why. And that's what's really difficult to, and that's why I do the advocation and education, for people, because, I understand how upsetting it can be when you don't know what's wrong with you. So I try to educate people about this disorder because, many times, and there's nothing wrong with nothing against the medical community, but many times they do get it wrong. It's no easy task to diagnose somebody. And so, that's why I do educate people on this disorder and hopefully, that'll help them out. I know that, that many times it's misdiagnosed with bipolar disorder as well. So, so the more I educate others, I think the better possibility of some folks actually getting a correct diagnosis.
Help us understand what it's like to live with this disorder. When you, and I realize that it manifests itself differently at different times and in different people, but for you, when you are in a crisis situation, can you describe what's happening in your brain?
It's there's many things that happen when I'm in crisis mode. Number one, I push people away. I push my loved ones away, friends, family, anybody. I push people away, and then what I do is I sulk in the fact that I'm alone. And I, many times will take things personally. I'll jump to conclusions. There's suicidal ideation. I really don't have anger outbursts, but some with borderline do. Living in the illness and living in what I call recovery mode or manageability mode, there's no break to this. It is constant. What I do is I feel more intense emotions than the average person. And that's very difficult to handle at times. So every day, even in recovery now, if I have negative thoughts, and which many times are instinctual from, decades of thinking negatively and thinking of the worst, I have to challenge those thoughts. And that I can't pick and choose today on which thoughts that I challenge. I have to challenge each and every thought. And that is exhausting. So a lot of people have a misconception that somebody in recovery or if somebody's doing well in their life, that it just becomes easier. Now, over time, over time, and I believe in the 40s and in the age of 40s and 50s, some of the symptoms may not be as strong. But there is no remission for this disorder. It is managing the disorder on a day-to-day basis.
When you are entering one of these periods with these intense emotions, is there a part of you that's aware that it's happening and that you're not responding the way that you want to?
Now, yes. Prior, and this comes down to an accountability approach that I take on in recovery today. And I kind of look at it like this, and this is just for me, but in the past, before I didn't know I had borderline personality disorder, it was not on me. It was not my fault by any means. I didn't know what I had, so there's no way to treat a disorder and no way to get adequate treatment or become healthy if I didn't even know what I had. So, but today, yes, I do. And so what I try to do is I try to stop, my approach is this, is that my thinking and my emotions have never gotten me into trouble, ever. Only my actions have in my life. Now, if I can change my thinking, if I can change my thinking into more positive thinking, I'm more likely to have positive emotions. If I am more likely to have positive emotions, I'm more likely to act in a positive way.
Tell me about when you received your diagnosis. What was going on that finally led to you getting the answers?
Sure. I had in late 2014, early 2015, something happened in me. You know, I was functional for many years and held a job for 7 years. And I was able to hold my life together, but something happened, and I'm not sure really what happened at that time. But, what I was trying to do is I was trying to find adequate treatment for, for what I, at the time, I didn't know what disorder I had. I just needed to find treatment. And I went to an addiction center, and I didn't even have one at the time. Now, the great thing is that I sat down with the psychiatrist for an hour and 45 minutes. And we went through the DSM together, the Bible of psychiatry. And prior to that, though, the last 18 years, my average psychiatry appointments, honestly, were 15 to 30 minutes. And we didn't talk. He didn't just say, okay, do you have number one? He said, all right, we're going to go over number one. And then I want you to give examples of how you feel that you may fit into this. And I want you to give me as many examples as possible. So that's what we did for all 9 criteria. And he looked at me and he said, Ross, he's like, you're there's a reason why, the medicine didn't fix you over the years. There's a reason why you have not been able to truly recover from this disorder. He said, you've been misdiagnosed for the past 2 decades. And so that was the start of it. And I was able to finally connect the dots over the years of why I did the things I did, why I felt the things I felt. And it was a huge sense of relief.
When you got that diagnosis, was there a treatment option at that point? I mean, a lot of what we've talked about so far, it sounds like the understanding has helped you use tools, behavioral tools, to manage your diagnosis, to manage the disorder. But was there an effective treatment available?
No. And that was so frustrating for me. And it's like, okay, you have this diagnosis, great, but what do you do about it after that?
I'm talking with Ross Trowbridge about what it's like to live with borderline personality disorder. We'll continue our conversation in just a moment. We will also bring a psychiatrist into the conversation, Dr. Donald Black of the University of Iowa. We'll talk about the challenges of diagnosing and treating this disorder. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Luther College, offering more than 60 areas of study, including the new data science and neuroscience majors, dedicated to preparing students for success in a changing world.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about borderline personality disorder. It's a mental illness that's extremely difficult to diagnose and difficult to treat. And right now, we're talking about what it's like to live with this disorder. My guest is Ross Trowbridge. He has lived with borderline personality disorder for decades, although he only received a correct diagnosis just about 3 years ago. And Ross, I want to talk about your project, your I Am Not Ashamed project. And let's talk about how this started. You had lost a job. You wound up homeless living in Des Moines. You picked up a cardboard box and you wrote something on it. What did you write?
I wrote, I have borderline personality disorder and I'm not ashamed. Break the stigma and silence equals death is what I put on the box. I went down to a UPS store downtown Des Moines and asked for a box and a marker. And something hit me when I was homeless. I never thought I'd be homeless in my life. I really didn't. I lost a job. And it wasn't due to my disorder. It was a job elimination. And so I lost a job and I became homeless. I had no resources. And what happened is I went out there, and the second day I was out there, I said, I need to get out of myself. And I was angry about the lack of resources in our state and our country. So I wanted to educate people about borderline personality disorder. I wanted to talk to them about the lack of resources that we have in the state of Iowa.
You have launched the I Am Not Ashamed project to take this message beyond the Sculpture Park in Des Moines. Tell me about the reach. You put up a website. You want people to take their message out to the streets on August 18th of this year. And how many people do you have that are going to do that so far?
Well, you know, I launched it about just over a month ago. And honestly, my goal was to have 50 people worldwide to go out on August 18th. And I felt that was completely realistic because, you know, this is a very difficult thing for people to do, to out themselves and to do it in their own community or a surrounding community. And, you know, and so right now we have representatives in 14 states, 31 cities and 4 countries who are confirmed to participate thus far. And we're going to take photos, selfies of our boxes and the people that we talk to with their permission. And we're going to plaster it all over social media. And we're going to put the hashtag Project I'm Not Ashamed. And we're going to make this an annual event.
And have you decided where you're going to be on this August 18th?
Not yet. We're gonna organize a place where we can all go out together. Some people may want to go out by themselves, and that's fine. We have people going out who don't have mental illness at all. One person doesn't even know somebody who has mental illness, but they're going to go out with a sign that I'm a supporter of those with mental illness with the hashtag Project I'm Not Ashamed.
Well, it's exciting that it's catching on so strongly. Ross, thank you so much for talking with me today.
Thank you so much. I greatly appreciate you having me on.
Ross Trowbridge lives in Cedar Falls. He is campaigning to end mental illness stigma with a project called I Am Not Ashamed. You can find a link to his website on our Twitter feed at IPR Talk. And we're going to continue our conversation now about borderline personality disorder. And you're welcome to join as well with your stories. Is this something that has touched your life? You can give us a call, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And with me now is Dr. Donald Black. He's a professor of psychiatry at the University of Iowa, director of the Psychiatry Residency Training Program, and vice chair for education for the Department of Psychiatry. Hello, Dr. Black.
Yes, how are you today?
Very good. Thank you so much for being here.
And you're welcome.
Earlier, I read the definition of borderline personality disorder according to the National Institute on mental health. But I wonder if, as a psychiatrist, if you can give us a little more nuance, because this is a disorder that presents itself in many different ways, isn't it?
Yes, and I think Rob was completely correct in describing it as an emotional and intensity disorder. These patients have inappropriately intense emotions that lead to emotional and behavioral instability that affects many areas of their life. So they often have mood swings, impulsive behavior, stormy relationships, self-harm, and they often fear abandonment. And Rob described nearly all of those things.
It's called a personality disorder. Is that an important part of the title, of the distinction, as opposed to a mood disorder?
Not really. To me, it's just another classification of disorders that we see and treat as psychiatrists. But as Rob pointed out, it took him many years to receive what sounds to me like a correct diagnosis. And that's because doctors, therapists, psychologists tend to have a bias against the diagnosis, and they often don't see the entire pattern of illness. So they might focus on the depression that the patient reports, or the anxiety, or the substance abuse, and they don't connect the dots.
Well, and as Ross mentioned, about 2% of people are thought to have borderline personality disorder, but that number is also thought to be lower than the actual representation in our population, isn't it?
Well, the surveys show that between 1% and 2% of the population has this illness. Now, in my setting at a university medical center, I'd say maybe 20% of our inpatients have this disorder, and my department has been one of the leaders in conducting research on this disorder. So we've known all about it. We teach our medical students and residents about it, and we're doing our best, but the mental health profession often is not helping us.
In what way?
Providing support for research, providing educational materials, organizing, events to raise money for this. I mean, this sort of thing.
Let's talk. It's obviously underdiagnosed in a lot of situations, but let's talk about what we know about people who live with borderline personality disorder. When does it tend to start showing up? When do we start seeing symptoms?
Well, Rob mentioned that he started having symptoms in adolescence, and that's true for most patients. So by late adolescence, the early 20s, they have the full spectrum of symptoms and would probably meet diagnostic criteria.
I can imagine with the kind of intense emotions that he was describing that when teenagers are teenagers, there are a lot of intense emotions to go around. Does that one of the things that makes it difficult to diagnose?
Well, I think that misleads some doctors and therapists, yes, but some of the symptoms are so characteristic that I don't think you can really connect them with other possible things, including normal adolescent behavior. So, for example, someone who has these very strong fears of abandonment and because of that acts out on that. So, for example, they have a relationship and they'll show up at the person's door, or they'll send hundreds of texts a day. If they feel that they've been abandoned or slighted by this person, and most people don't try to harm themselves. About 3/4 of borderline patients engage in deliberate self-harm, which usually manifests as cutting behavior. In some circles, cutting may be popular. It's certainly become more prevalent, but it's still an unusual and worrisome symptom. So you take all these worrisome symptoms, and they go far beyond what you would see in a normal adolescent.
The gender split in diagnosis of borderline personality disorder is really striking. Right now, 70% of people with this diagnosis are female. Why do you think that there's such a split?
That's hard to know. I give lectures on this. I was just lecturing in Alaska the other day on this, and I pointed out to the audience that we really don't know why it's a female preponderant disorder. However, if you look at the disorders that we see and treat, many of them are more common in women. Some are more common in men. That's just how it works. Why, I don't know.
There are some people who have theorized that women are more likely to ask for help, or girls are more likely to ask for help. Do you think that there's a misrepresentation of how common it is?
But that doesn't explain it, because very carefully done epidemiologic surveys in the community still show this gender split. So it's not just in clinical samples like our hospital that we have a female preponderance. It's in the general population with carefully done studies.
That's very interesting. And so when somebody is presenting these symptoms and gets this diagnosis, I mean, first off, I can imagine how scary it is, because death by suicide is extremely common among people with this diagnosis, isn't it?
It is. About up to 10% of people with this diagnosis will kill themselves. It's a very worrisome thing.
And although it doesn't necessarily co-present with depression, so when someone has these suicidal thoughts with borderline personality disorder, does it often look different or present itself different than how we might think about suicidal thoughts with other people?
Well, one of the things that's characteristic about this disorder, and I think misleads a lot of doctors, is that the patient comes in and typically reports having mood swings. And I put that in air quotes, which you can't see, but the patient says that their mood is unstable, it goes up and down, it shifts very rapidly. And this is not typically what we see in a pure depressive illness or a pure bipolar illness. But as Rob indicates, it makes you feel out of control. So I've had patients tell me that it's very difficult for them to plan events down the road, even in the next week, because they don't know what their mood is going to be like, because it shifts so rapidly. And it's often in connection with some kind of event that happens in their life that you and I may experience, and it's just a small bump in the road. But they'll have these very severe, intense reactions.
When someone gets this diagnosis, what can a mental health professional offer them as far as treatment? I mean, we've heard that a lot of different medications that may be useful with other mental illnesses are not useful with borderline personality disorder. Is there a medical treatment?
Well, let me talk about treatment in general, because the treatment of choice is psychotherapy. There are very well-developed therapy programs. We developed one here at the University of Iowa called the STEPS program. There are seven that are evidence-based. That means that they've been thoroughly researched. They do work. But it's important to understand, none are curative. They will help the patient. They will help the patient understand what they're dealing with. They'll give them the psychological and behavioral skills that they can use to manage the disorder. None are curative. So when we have a patient like this, I refer them to either our STEPS program, or some areas might have a DBT or dialectical behavior therapy program. And there are other programs too. The evidence suggests that all programs are probably equally effective, but the problem patients encounter is that they can't find a program where they live. So this is where the mental health community needs to step up to the plate and see that these programs are adequately disseminated throughout Iowa, throughout the country. Now, in addition to that, most patients with this disorder do take psychiatric medication, and Rob is completely correct. None of them are curative, and in fact, while most patients get some benefit, and it almost doesn't matter what medication you give them, and what I teach my residents to do is you target the main symptoms that they report. So if their main symptom is mood instability, I'd give them a mood stabilizer. If depression and anxiety is a problem, I'd give them a serotonin reuptake inhibitor antidepressant. Some patients benefit from antipsychotics. From my perspective, the big problem is that the doctors tend to focus on one area, then another area of symptoms. And when I see them on our inpatient unit, they're on 4, 5, 6, 7 psychiatric medications that really aren't that helpful to them.
And I can imagine that in some cases, the side effects of that many medications can also cause problems.
Oh, absolutely. We call this polypharmacy, and it's expensive. These drugs are not cheap, and they're really not relevant to treating the disorder. So if I can, I encourage the patient to allow me to kind of wean them off medications that I think are probably the least likely to be helpful to them. So in patients that I treat, I want to limit the number of medications to one or two. Sometimes that's hard to achieve.
Sure. And I want to talk about the STEPS program, which you work with, the Systems Training for Emotional Predictability and Problem Solving.
Uh-huh.
And I want to go through what that would look like for a patient. We're coming up on a break here in just a moment. But when someone gets this diagnosis, they enter this training or this treatment program, right? How long a commitment is that?
It's a 5-month program. It meets once a week, so there are 20 specific lessons. So it's not therapy the way people think of therapy. You know, you're not lying on a sofa free associating. You're not talking about your childhood experiences. It's more akin to a classroom experience. You're sitting with other people in front of a blackboard, the therapist, usually there are two therapists, are in front of the room, writing on the board. Everyone has a workbook with specific lessons and their homework assignments. So in a sense, it's like classwork. So the way it works is each week has a different lesson. So maybe this week's lesson is self-harm. So what's self-harm? Why do you do it? Why do you engage in it? And what are the strategies that you can use to minimize or eliminate the self-harm? So that's what we focus on. We're teaching people.
And we'll talk more about that after a break. We are going to be back in just a couple of minutes. We'll talk more about borderline personality disorder, living with it, treating it. With me, Dr. Donald Black, professor of psychiatry at the University of Iowa. We'd love to hear from you as well. Is this something that has touched your life? 866-780-9100 is the number to call. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about borderline personality disorder. It's a mental illness that's extremely difficult to diagnose. It's very difficult to treat and, of course, also extremely difficult to live with. And with me right now is Dr. Donald Black. He's a professor of psychiatry at the University of Iowa, director of the Psychiatry Residence Training Program and vice chair for education for the Department of Psychiatry at the University of Iowa. We're talking about treatment options and what people go through after a diagnosis of borderline personality disorder. And we'd love for you to join the conversation as well. Is this something that has touched your life? Do you have borderline personality disorder? Does someone in your life have borderline personality disorder? Give us a call. Share your story. 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And before the break, Dr. Black, we were talking about the fact that when someone gets this diagnosis, there are not necessarily a lot of pharmaceutical options, although some medicines can be helpful. Really, the thing that seems to be the most helpful for people is to get into a behavioral program. And you mentioned that there are a number of different behavioral programs that seem to be equally effective. You work with the STEPS program. The STEPS program stands for Systems Training for Emotional Predictability and Problem Solving. It runs 20 weeks. And you said it's like a classroom type environment. Can you give me a few more examples of some of the we talked about self-harm, maybe a class session on self-harm, how to cope with the impulse to harm oneself. Let's talk about some of the other subjects that are covered in this program.
Okay, so let me just address that briefly. So there are 20 lessons, as I would call it, and the first couple have to do with the definition of borderline personality disorder, because often the diagnosis is new to patients, so we want to review the criteria, the definition. We educate them about the disorder, because to go further, at least from our point of view, the patient has to have a buy-in into what we're doing and what we're trying to get them to do. We give them their workbook. We give them teaching assignments. Now, one of the things that we know about these patients is that they often have lifestyle problems. So they tend to be, on the whole, I don't know if this is true with Rob, but they tend to be inactive, overweight, lots of medical problems, they smoke, they drink too much. So there are several lessons that have to do with lifestyle. So diet, appropriate exercise, learning appropriate leisure skills, how to spend your time appropriately, this sort of thing. But other lessons involve other things like how can you learn to regulate your unstable emotions as best you can? How do you deal with fears of abandonment? And so we kind of go through it, take the diagnosis apart and deal with the symptoms and teach cognitive and behavioral skills that the person can carry with them for the rest of their life.
When somebody goes through this therapy, Some of us are better students than others. I mean, you mentioned that, these programs tend to be about equally as effective, but how effective is it?
I didn't catch the last word, but at the end of the program, we give patients certificates of completion, so they've graduated from the program. But you're right, some people learn faster than others or better than others. So we do allow patients to repeat the program if they need that. Sometimes patients will come back years later and say, you know, I need to have some booster sessions. Now, after our STEPS program, which lasts 20 weeks, we do have another program that we encourage patients to enter called Stairways. That lasts an entire year, and it's less intensive. So not as many meetings, not as many assignments, but they still stay in touch with us. They stay in touch with some of the peers that they met in the program, and we think that that helps ease them back into the community.
Are support groups something that is helpful to people with borderline personality disorder? I can imagine that it can be very isolating to experience these intense emotions when other people don't understand why you're acting the way you're acting.
Well, that's true, and that's why I think entering a program like this, and ours is one of the shortest. Some of the other programs around the country last a minimum of 1 year. So I think that does help the person because they'll meet other people, they'll feel less alone, they'll feel less isolated by having this disorder. But some people need other types of support groups for other problems. Many borderline patients, for example, are alcoholic and will benefit from AA. Some gamble excessively. They can go to Gamblers Anonymous and so on. We also encourage people to become involved in the National Alliance for the Mentally Ill. It used to be thought that the organization was mainly devoted to schizophrenic and border and bipolar patients, but they have a strong interest in borderline personality disorder as well.
We'll continue talking about this in just a moment with me, Dr. Donald Black, professor of psychiatry at the University of Iowa. I also want to go to the phones, and you are welcome to join our conversation. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. Katie is on the line with us in North Liberty. Hello, Katie.
Hi there.
Thank you so much for calling. And you yourself was... You were diagnosed with borderline personality disorder. Can you tell me about that?
Yeah, I was diagnosed with borderline personality disorder when I was 19. I did meet the diagnostic criteria then. I consider myself to be recovered, or at least in recovery. I no longer meet the full criteria. I still struggle with the intense emotions, though, and so still have that issue where something minor will trigger a huge emotional response in me and can be perfectly fine 1 minute, a little thing happens, and then might be struggling with feelings, suicidal ideation, or extreme anger. So I wanted to also say I've had a lot of therapy over the years. That was 19 years ago. And one mode of therapy that I found the most helpful for borderline personality disorder is called internal family systems therapy. And I guess I would definitely encourage people that have that diagnosis to try and find a therapist that can help them with that.
Well, and Katie, in saying that you feel like you are in recovery or recovered, I'm curious, do you think that something about you has changed? Is this something you've outgrown in a sense, or is this because of the tools that you've developed to cope?
I think it is because of the tools. I think part of it is just when I got the diagnosis, it was so devastating. I had been pretty high functioning in high school, and I was in college and had failed out of college. And I was just really devastated, and I didn't have any hope for my future. From what I was told by psychiatrists, it seemed like, you know, I was going to be struggling and never going to be successful. I'm very successful. One of my biggest fears is that I wouldn't be able to have children. I have children. I have a great marriage. I'm married to a lovely man. So I've had a career. I'm actually back in school now to be a therapist myself. But I just think I want people to know that there is hope. for a great life, well, even if you have borderline personality disorder.
I'm so glad you've done so well, and thank you so much for sharing your story, Katie.
Yeah, thank you.
You are welcome to join our conversation at 866-780-9100. Dr. Black, it must be exciting to hear from someone like Katie who has been able to use the tools that she developed so well over time. Do you see patients that you've worked with in the past? Do you run into them later on? And is Katie's story typical of some people?
Yes, I do. And what Katie is telling us is what the research shows, and that is, As people with borderline personality disorder get older, many of the symptoms either subside or at least they're less intense, and many of them no longer meet criteria for the disorder. However, if you probe further than that, and Katie admits this, she still has problems from the disorder. So she no longer meets the diagnosis, but she's still has some of these minor problems, and we see that in our patients.
Well, and her level of awareness obviously helps a great deal with that, and I'm sure that's something that also develops over time. Again, when we're teenagers, that kind of level of awareness is hard to achieve, isn't it?
Right, and that's a big problem early on because a lot of the patients don't have the maturity or insight early on to enter a program or to enter therapy which could be helpful to them. And with some patients, I tell them, you know, this is not the right time to enter a program because it's going to require and demand a lot from you, so you have to be ready for it.
Let's go back to the phones. Craig is on the line in Story County. Hello, Craig.
Yeah, good morning. How are you folks?
Good. What's your question?
I'll keep it brief. I have three possibles. Number one, could this be a genetically inherited disorder? And number two, the correlation between some symptoms of which may be misdiagnosed as Asperger's, which actually may be possible borderline personality disorders. And number three, are there any, I know you're in U of I, Dr. Black, are there any resources here in Polk or Story County you could maybe save us a trip over if we could possibly get over? We have four kids, and I think maybe one or two of them might have this borderline personality disorder and could have been misdiagnosed. One of them with Asperger's, who we've been trying to help, and he's 35, and he's had some of the typical problems associated with anxiety, antisocial moods. And so I can listen off the air, or I can hang on.
Okay. Well, Craig, thank you so much for your call. And let's go step by step through what Craig was talking about. Does there seem to be a genetic link? Does this run in families?
Actually, it does. I think a lot of people find that hard to understand, but there is a genetic component. It's clearly not all genetic. I don't know that there's any particular relationship with Asperger's or autism spectrum disorder, but there could be in certain cases. And as for the last thing the gentleman was asking about, resources, certainly a lot of the psychiatrists in Polk County were trained in my department, often by me, and so they, you know, and I certainly convey the message that you need to diagnose and treat this condition. But we've also taught therapists at various mental health clinics in that area to deliver our STEPS program. And but I think the larger point is, and I totally agree with this, when you have people with this diagnosis, it's often very hard to find providers who understand it.
Well, okay, let's talk about that, because not only might there be a difficulty in finding providers that understand it, but we know that our mental health system is overtaxed and that access is a huge issue for people who need services. Do you feel like, let's just focus on Iowa, do you feel like the needs are being met in this state?
Well, in general, for psychiatric patients, no. I've lived in Iowa since 1982, and I've watched the mental health system deteriorate and become more fragmented, with fewer psychiatrists, fewer beds, fewer resources. I could go on and on, but you get the picture. And that applies to borderline personality disorder, too. Now, one of the things that I find ironic is psychiatry is low-tech. From the healthcare perspective, it doesn't cost much to treat patients as compared to medical and surgical problems, but the system simply is not providing the resources that we need to do what we can for our patients. I think this is a real tragedy.
Do people find that, for example, their insurance will cover participation in a therapy program like STEPS?
Actually, they will, because we know they help patients, and so that may cut back on hospital stays, and so the insurer sees the benefit there. So we hardly ever see anyone turned away from our STEPS program, for example.
Before we run out of time, you've mentioned several times mental health providers and encouraging mental health providers to be aware of this diagnosis. Do you find that there are mental health providers who don't believe that borderline personality disorder is real?
Absolutely. Absolutely. There's a major bias against the disorder. I conducted I led a large survey that I have since published of over 700 mental health professionals of all types, and nearly 50% said that they did not want to treat borderline patients. So we didn't ask them if they're willing to diagnose it, but the fact that nearly half didn't want to treat these patients, and I point this out to audiences, to me this is just unacceptable.
And scary.
Yes.
When, in the last minute, you mentioned that this is a disorder that presents often in the teen years. Do you have advice for parents who have a child that gets this diagnosis? Because, again, 1 in 10 people diagnosed with borderline personality disorder end up ending their lives to suicide. What should parents do? What can they do?
Be understanding and be very persistent in getting proper care for their child. A lot of people, because of the behaviors that many of these patients exhibit, they turn off other people. So people, they drive people away, including family members, and that's part of the tragedy of this. You need to be understanding. You need to be persistent. You need to be helpful. I wouldn't enable their misbehaviors, but do help them find the right resources and the right people to help them.
Dr. Black, thank you so much for talking with me today.
You're welcome.
Dr. Donald Black, professor of psychiatry at the University of Iowa, director of the Psychiatry Residency Training Program and vice chair for education for the Department of Psychiatry. We've been talking about borderline personality disorder this hour. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.